I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Clyde McGill. Welcome, Clyde.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
Clyde, here we are in the Nisdor Gallery in Palmyra, quite close to Fremantle. Amongst all of the pieces you're exhibiting for this last week and a little bit more to go, called The Speech.
Yeah.
It's quite beautiful, and I love sitting amongst your art. As you know, I actually have a couple of pieces hanging in my home, which remind me very much in colour of a number of pieces here, particularly this very long piece, which must be 15, 20 metres.
Yeah, oh no, it's not quite that, it's 10 metres.
10 metres? Don't buy real estate from me.
Yeah.
And that's because...
As a geometer, that's a fail.
It's got this red. I mean, for the Chinese, red's a very important colour. Is red an important colour for you?
Must be. Look at it. It's everywhere.
It is everywhere.
Just keeps arriving.
How do you, in your work, get to choose a colour?
I don't.
It happens.
I think red is the colour that... I think I can say it says a lot of things for me, red. And I don't know, Michael, it's like just arrives a lot of the time. It's like, you know, I'm suddenly painting in red or printing in red or black, because black goes, it's the kind of foundational colour. All colours occur in black, as they say. But sometimes it just, a lot of the time, it's just red.
That, of course, is the colour that the town was painted by the painters. They painted the town red.
Yeah. Has a wonderful, like it has all sorts of histories, I suppose.
Colour of blood.
A colour of blood, yep.
Oh. Colour of fortune.
Fortune, yeah.
This exhibition, The Speech, what's it all about?
I call it my COVID exhibition. It's not really, because I had another solo exhibition since then, you know, after. But it is something... I mean, I've always been interested in making art about where I am and you know, what's going on, what's happening there. You know, that's a really important part of, as much as, you know, there's techniques and there's aesthetics and there's all the other things that are obviously, you know, in art, but I think, just that kind of the thing about what's happening around me in terms of, like, in time and space, you know. And so this speech, the one thing that stands out for me in through this whole COVID thing, in terms of a personal thing, is the way every time I look around, there's someone standing up behind a lectern making a speech, you know, and it's kind of like it's a proposition of power, isn't it? You know, it's like, for me, I think, so the lectern is the infrastructure to that power, you know. It's and it's the piece that often holds the power up, and like it holds performance up, holds a sculpture up, you know. And then there's the speech itself, which is often, I don't know, it's either repeated and repeated and repeated and, you know, in a really comical way after a while, you know. And then there's the gobbledygookness of it. And I was like, I don't know about you, but sometimes I listen to those things and I think, what did they say then? What happened?
You must list longer than me, Clyde. I turned it off by then.
Well, see, it's research for me.
This looks like gobbledygook on this 10 metres.
Yes.
Some writing there.
Yeah, that's right. So the exhibition has in it then, it has two things in it, the shape of a lectern.
And we have
abstracted
it.
In many ways.
With a lectern right in front of us here.
Yeah, abstracted.
Abstracted.
And my friend Peter said to me, why, because I always do installational art and art on the wall. He said, I just don't understand. And he's a kind of master fabricator. He said, I don't understand why you don't have sculptures in your exhibition. And so I made a lectern as a three-dimensional piece. So there's the shape of a lectern in, as I said, in obviously different ways. And then there's writing, which is called asemic writing, you know, out of semantics, you know. So it's called asemic writing, where we recognise it as writing, but it doesn't have a meaning to it. You can't make a meaning to it, you know, but we recognise, oh, that's writing or speech, you know. And so they're the two things that are mixed up in this exhibition. They're the two things that I've been working on for 12 or 18 months to put this work together.
I'm interested to explore the question of meaning. Are you trying to communicate something to us all? But think about that for a moment. Let me ask you a couple of other questions.
I need 3 weeks to think about that.
I know, I'm going to give you 5 minutes. But Clyde, you've had a couple of careers. You weren't always an artist, were you? Well, you probably always were, but you had a formal day job before you became an artist, did you not?
I'm looking out the window now. In response to that question.
There must have been a day in your old day job when you were looking out the window and knew you had to engage in this other career.
Yeah, I suppose that's correct.
Was it always lurking?
Lurking.
Lurking. When you were 15, did you dream of doing what you're doing now?
Yeah.
You did?
Yep.
And it burned inside you?
Yeah, it had a lot of outlets, you know. It wasn't like I was, you know, every day frustrated because I wasn't drawing or something. It had lots of outlets, so it just had, as many people do, I think.
Yes.
Like these days you have, how many careers do you have? 3 careers? 10-year careers? You know, that 10-year career is quite a big, long career, isn't it? Although this is starting to get now towards one of my longer.
This is getting serious.
So I've been exhibiting, I just worked out with this exhibition, I've been exhibiting for 20 years now. And it's, yeah, that's kind of, But I don't think of this as a career. It's like.
This is what you do.
I have no interest in it being a career. In fact, I only have really, yes, I have something of an anti-career interest in it.
So, not approaching the question I raised a minute
Did
ago.
Did I duck that one okay?
So far, we'll treat it as rhetorical for the moment. But you've also had, and there is a degree of it here, more than a degree of it here, an installation aspect to your work. I found it always very difficult just to look at one piece, big or small of yours, and look at it alone. It always seems to come with a lot of other things. And I just don't
attachments.
Attachments. I'm not talking about things that are complementary in a theme, but right in front of us is, you know, is an installation piece. This is this three-dimensional construction of a lectern. Perhaps it was built about the time of the Dead Sea Scrolls. You know. but was installation something that you were always fascinated by?
Yeah. It's I think it works well for me. I think it works well for art. Having pieces within the space and having pieces that don't really take account of the space but remake the space, you know, if that makes sense. And I think you can say a lot by having a pieces installed in a different sort of a way. And then if you add performance or something to it, of course that adds another whole layer to it as well.
Well, I've been lucky enough to be present at one or two of those sort of events, and it's a great experience for the viewer, for the listener, for the participant who comes along, because you start asking yourself questions along the lines of the one I rhetorically put to you. Take, for example, not so long ago, in the Fremantle Arts Centre, upstairs, you had an exhibition, you had wires running places, people were given pieces of wood.
That's it. Yeah.
We sort of were caught up as though we were in a boat.
In the story, yes.
In the story.
Because narrative, I think, narrative's important.
Narrative. I was brought up Catholic. It suddenly struck me that I was back in the Stations of the Cross.
Well, that's where that...
What was that one all about?
You know, you have things as an artist that kind of fascinate you as you walk around, you know, and they fascinate you for, you know, and other artists will talk about being fascinated by something for 20 years or 30 years without making any art about it, but just being fascinated by it and going back and looking at it and re-looking at it and looking for it. And yeah, the Stations of the Cross was something that started for me in boarding school in a religious way, but I was interested in as later in that as a series of events, you know, because I think event, you know, an event or the idea of event and art as an event in a kind of maybe a contusion of time and space is quite interesting. So that was, yeah. So I did, I don't know how many, but I photographed lots and lots and lots of Stations of the Cross. And that was events of a story of a family that were displaced by not their own doing, you know, by war or famine or politics. And they needed a new home. And that was the story of their journey, really.
It was powerful.
Oh,
and
thanks.
As an artist, as an individual, from what you were saying, some issue, you can call it a social issue if you want, you can call it a humanitarian vibe, you can call it what you like, but this must have started burning you at some point. You wanted to express yourself about it.
That's right, yeah. So it sort of bubbles up and you push it down and it bubbles up and you take a stick to it sometimes and beat it and see if it still, you know, has some... See what really... And sometimes you get waylaid, you know, you get waylaid and you go off and you do some little part of it and you think, oh, that is or isn't or something, you know, that's not it. But, yeah, it does. It just sits there and then all of a sudden sometimes you're making it, whatever it is, you know. You go, oh, this is, oh, I see.
This is something has led you, you follow it.
Yeah, that's, I think, I love that freedom of being... Yeah, being an artist where you can just follow it. Yeah. You can just imagine it up, you know, make it up, imagine it up. But most of my work will have mixed up with something that's happening you know, something real in the real world that's happening.
I recall some of your earlier work, exhibitions before that, grappled with this grappled with the fact that this little planet Earth that we live on has all these boundaries on it, all these borders written across it. And once upon a time I thought, perhaps juvenile optimism, that they were just useful things for all sorts of regulatory reasons, but I could go anywhere and there'd be nothing to prevent me. I belong to the world, but I don't think you always saw it like that, or you saw the problems with borders, did you not?
Yeah, that's true, I think in many ways borders have come down and borders have gone up, you know, it's kind of like some sort of dichotomy that's like, and of course with the virtual world, the borders have come down, like, totally, and yet we have probably stronger borders than we've had a lot, haven't we? You know, with people, and people have to kind of cross borders that they can't cross, or they can only cross. You know, I did quite a bit of work on the Mexican border, the US-Mexican border, around El Paso when I was there, and you know, people could come over on a day pass, on a shopping pass. They could walk over the bridge. So it's not like, but then people who wanted to come to into the US, there were, you know, it was extraordinary. Even back then, there was a wall there, and there were vigilantes, and there was a river that was paved so you could get into it, but you couldn't get out of it. Which kind of, I'm not sure, nationalism maybe has a lot to answer for. Perhaps not, I'm not sure. I think that we do a lot of stuff just, I don't know, because it works for us.
Clyde, years ago, probably not as long as we think, we ran into each other in Brooklyn.
Oh, we did too.
And you were running around with a laser or a measuring stick or running around Manhattan. What were you doing? answer for yourself.
I did. I was there for a year, you know, at the New School.
You're at Fulbright or something.
Fulbright, yeah. I had a Fulbright scholarship in visual and performing art, and I was there. So we were there for a year, and Colin and I lived in Brooklyn, I just did the people at Parsons. Were really great to me, and they just said, I said I wanted to do this work on the streets and outside, and they said, well, go and do it then. That was really great. But I did the book, I just finished the book, but I did a project where I walked up Broadway, you know, the old Broadway runs at an, you know, it's a regional road, and so I picked that, and I thought, because one of the things you could say about the US, and you could particularly say about New York, is that it's a borderland. You know, it's not, doesn't exist except as a borderland. And so I did this walk for the year I was there. I walked 2-3 days a week. If I was in New York, which I mostly was, we did a bit of work outside. And I explored the idea of New York being a border or a borderland, and took photos and did drawings and did performances on the street and performances in Times Square. Had a lot of fun.
Just another crazy Aussie on Manhattan.
Yeah, because people there are so, they are so hospitable and so free to come up and talk to you, you know, that's, and so it was wonderful, yeah.
So, what with that sense that New York, Manhattan was a border land, what would you want someone to understand from that appreciation? That it's a confined space, that it's a, that no, there's something that it's special going on there?
Yes, all those things. And it's expanded, it's an expanded border, you know, so the border's not a line anymore. It's, in fact, a space. And that is a space where maybe it's temporary, maybe it's people, it has legalities, but it has illegalities as well. It's a place you can hide. It's a place where you can get shelter. But it's impermanent. There's a lot of impermanence about it in terms of individual impermanence, but also impermanence of perhaps the politics or the
So your art, when we start to look at some of the themes we've touched on,
yes,
some of the works you've exhibited, is political, whether it's a big P or a little P?
Oh yeah.
Isn't it?
Well,
do you think of it that way?
Yes, although I think, like if I, to go back to the original question of meaning, which I won't answer now, but...
I thought I was subtly getting there.
I was just pushing it aside once more. But I think often a lot of my work is about fairness. If you have to kind of put it in a one word
thing,
I think it's about being fair, being unfair. And of course, then that takes in lots of things. But I'm not... I do make art too that is just about, I mean, within that, I guess, a lot of my work is, I'm interested in aesthetics and, you know, all the normal things of art. So,
Yes. Now, something I am interested in,
yes,
and artists, when they're asked this question, can look out the window and
yes,
suddenly they're hearing.
So do I look out the
fails
window
fails the look out the window question coming up. But this is a serious question.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a teenager, loved Picasso, and I loved all of those Picasso-ish Picassos that we all know Picasso for, and then I discovered this guy was, in a very traditional sense, a guy who could draw anything. He could take a pencil and a pad and he could do it, and then he suddenly became individualized in all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your work, as we look around to the tutored, even the untutored eye, you see things. But just focus, because we're sitting under it, on the 10-meter piece here.
Oh, yes. This is called the speech.
The speech. Well, that's good. We've got the lectern here. The speech is being made.
So it's a visualisation of a speech.
So with everything we've talked about, you can start to put meaning into it. But when it comes to the realisation of this work of art,
yes,
and there are squiggles, there's white Himalayan base at the bottom, which no doubt has got nothing to do with the Himalayas, there are things that look like round cylinders. There are things that look like they could be large insects. There are black Rothko-looking spots. There are things inverted. There are triangles. When you first started painting, were you painting like that?
For this work?
No, just generally.
Oh.
Have you gone on some journey that's brought you to this point?
Window? I guess it's all a journey, isn't it? It's like life's a journey, without being too sort of crass about it. But I think as an artist you do, it's kind of... as an artist I want to say something, whatever it is. It doesn't need to be a political message or a social message or... but I'm interested in, even if it's just saying something about that colour or that surface or that, I'm interested in exploring that or something. And I guess that the thing about it is that I'm interested The thing that underlies that is I'm interested in experimentation and the risk that is attached to that. And if it doesn't have that, I really try not to, I try to avoid making work that's not experimental and not doesn't have some risk in it, risk in terms of, and I'm not talking about chance, I'm talking about the actual risk of it, you know, the risk of failure, because I think as artists we live in a world of failure, you know, it's, and I think that is a place that I'm attracted to, and therefore I'm not making art that is perhaps instantly articulates something to the viewer, although I'm extraordinarily interested in the viewer and the space between the art and the viewer and not keeping the viewer out of the art. So it has, you know, I think that's an important place for me. I don't know if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. Your work is amazingly original. And for people like me, it challenges me to think, what is this artist doing here? I don't mean that phrase in, you know, bugger off. I mean, I want to stay and work this out. And I love, as I said earlier, perhaps I didn't say I loved it, but I do love the installation qualities, the space we're in. Now, you've got something here that looks like it might have accompanied the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's about a foot and a half wide. People listening to this can have a look at the photos. You've got it pulled out. It looks like it could go for another 10 or 15 metres. It almost covers the entire width of this very large exhibition space. What's going on here?
It's beautiful paper, isn't it? I really like the paper of it. It's not expensive paper, but it's paper.
Is it different paper from the other materials?
Well, this is a Japanese paper.
Right.
And it has a lightness about it, and it has such a beautiful hapticity or tactility, you know. And when you're working with it, it's just gorgeous to work with. It's really... And I wanted to make, I thought of the speech writers, you know, because the speech obviously has the layers of it. So this is notes for a speech, for the speech. And so it's been edited, but not in a sense of taking stuff out of it, but rather layering stuff over the top of it. So that there is some sort of outcome to it, which might not be recognised as a speech, but it's a visualisation for me. It's a visual art attempt at making notes for a speech. And again, it has that acemic writing in it, which you can't read, but in a sense you can read it. You can read something, you know, that... And I hate to talk about reading artworks, but in this instance, reading... Yeah, the acemic writing is an important part of it. And so I was interested in, I've always been interested in artist books, you know, so books that are art, that artists make, not about art, but that are art. And so this is a scroll, which of course obviously predates the codex form of a book. And it's such an interesting, like kind of geometry to work with when you can roll it up, and I think it's a shame we kind of lost that in many ways, but of course we have laptops now and things like that.
This is what an exhibition like yours also reminds us about, doesn't it? It's not all reduced to a computer screen. You can't, it's not, what's this new form of art, non-fungible?
That's the one.
I mean, this could all be made non-fungible, I suppose. But here we are sitting talking about it. Mm-hmm. Haven't quite got to the meaning of life, but we've talked about fairness or unfairness.
Oh, yes.
The other thing, probably for me, the two pieces I love most here are the two that are hanging in the middle of the room. Mm-hmm. You sort of have to dodge around them, and then you discover not only have they got holes in them, you know, that the mice got in while they were busy doing something else.
I burnt them, Michael.
But they're painted on both sides.
Yes.
You're like, what's going on here?
That's very naughty, isn't it? Very, very naughty to make double-sided artwork.
Well, it does mean that the average punter like me who might want to acquire them can't easily hang them in their living room.
See, some of those old artworks, there has been double-sided artwork made, obviously, before. And then they frame them with glass on each side, which is really, really a beautiful thing to do, because then you can just have a turn this way and a turn that way. With more, you can just hang them like this. I think often we take art, especially art that's on paper or something, and we try and make it more acceptable, so we put a hard frame around it, and that when in fact it's just a beautiful, you see the way these are just moving in the breeze now, it's a beautiful material that can just hang and be just the way it is. But I understand there's issues with that. Yeah, it's nice. Well, what about these guys over on the window where I've been?
Well, I thought you were just trying to stop too much light coming in.
Probably dodging your questions.
These photograph are negatives.
Yeah. So they're plates. They're printing plates that actually print this piece of work.
Oh, my goodness.
And I've shown plates. You don't see plates very much because they're kind of like the mechanics of making the work, a bit like maybe exhibiting your brushes or something if you're painting. But I really like plates. I think there's a wonderful kind of, there's a wonderful joy about plates.
Now, tell us a bit more about that technical side. Is everything that you do made with a plate? I suspect not, but the speech, the 10-metre long one is.
I do make prints, yeah. So, yeah, this is a print. And printing is a you know, certainly part of my practice, an important part of my practice, always has been. And these plates are... So you ink them up, obviously, do the stuff, you know, you ink them up and run them through a press with the paper and then transfer the image. But then you still have this, I mean, everyone knows that's what happens, but, you know, what happens to that?
What happens to the plate?
The plate, yeah, and often these are a kind of plastic, you know, this, you obviously use steel plates and wood, there's wood cuts here.
Yep.
Stuff, and they all just then, some of them are used for an addition, and then they're kind of like cancelled. You know, you've probably seen prints printed that have got cancelled backwards, scratched into them where the addition sold out and they've been cancelled and then they've been reprinted as cancelled addition.
Like Banksy shredding his work. More valuable second time round. Yeah. So what do you do with those, apart from hanging them here at the exhibition? Do you store them? Do you roll them? Do you flatten
them? Yeah, store them, yeah. Because they, you know, at this point they may well be used again or used in part or something like that. I sometimes make additions, but a lot of the time I don't make additions. So you have one unique work comes off it, or maybe you have a couple of proofs come off and then one work, and then I threw out a whole heap of plates not so long ago just because I can't store them and kind of, you know.
There's one big piece that caught my eye because the bloke was sort of looking at me when I came in the door.
Right.
A figurative piece, Clyde.
Yes.
A recognisable human being. That's a bit unusual for you.
Yeah, I've been interested for quite a while, and I did some early work on portraiture, if you could call it that. I think real portrait artists would just lie on the floor laughing if they heard me calling it that. But it really interests me, I think. And I've done some more just recently, and that's one of them. I think it's a fascinating area, and that, as you saw, that's like a half a head.
Yes.
That comes in, because I was thinking of the idea of like half truths.
Yep.
In the speeches we've heard through COVID, perhaps there's some half truths there, and so I made, that was my attempt at talking about half truths and fabricated people, in a sense, and that's what this, the hanging piece we were talking about a minute ago. It's about cyborgism, and you know, who's talking at the lectern? You know, is it a human, or is it a robot, or is it a mix of them, a cyborg, or yes.
And what do we make of it all?
And what do we make of it? Yeah, how do we, like, what messages are coming at us? Because maybe we're all cyborgs. I'm sure we are, because we all have electronics attached to us in some ways, many ways, these days.
Tell me about Fremantle. Preface to the question as you were talking.
Oh, this is another window question.
No, it's not a window. A window question. You're on the other side of the window. You're in it. You were talking about what used to be, at least, the unique quality, perhaps almost unique quality of New York, Manhattan, walking around, doing things.
Yeah.
People talking to you, sharing, openness.
Yeah.
A sense of freedom.
Yeah.
You're an artist, you live in Fremantle.
Yes.
You have a long association with the area.
Yes.
Is it a good place for an artist to live? We have a sense that many artists of performing and visual and all sorts, shapes, sizes, genders, ages, live. What is it?
Oh yeah, I think I really enjoy Fremantle. And we live away occasionally and we come back, and it's always like, I wonder what it will be like when we come back. But we've come back so many times now, and it's always better than we sort of remember or we think about. And it is. It's just a great place to live. Great community. I enjoy it a lot, you know. And I don't have any interest in not living there at all, ever. I think, but of course, we spent a few years in Melbourne while I was studying, and we, you know, but it's always like our base, you know. I live and work in Fremantle, even if I'm in New York. I'm still, in a sense, living and working in Fremantle. It's great, and it has all. What else do you need? Hey, you got great stuff. And
you mentioned the word community. What is that? What is it for you?
I think it's an acceptance I think it's an acceptance of each and every person, whoever they are, whatever they do. I think it's an acceptance and an embrace of that. So for me, that's, and of course you could go on, but at the root of it, I think I think that's it, really. That's wonderful, isn't it? It's really.
Well, Harry Potter-like, you walk straight through the window to answer that question.
Oh, you tricked me. Let's not go back to those others we haven't answered.
Clyde, we'll draw this conversation to a close, but just before I do, I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm obliged to ask it. Do you have any particular projects in mind? Do you see what it is you might want to be doing with your work over a period ahead? Or probably the answer that you gave to a much earlier question about, in a sense, you're just living and doing what you do. Do Do you have, in that sense, structure and plans?
I feel like I should be answering this in a, some way, you know. But without shooting myself, I really don't. I have work that I'm doing now, like it, work just continues, making art, it just continues. But it doesn't, I don't have a plan, or I don't have, I might have a plan within, oh, I'll do an edition of these prints, or I'll, you know, make a book, or I'll do these paintings or something. But I don't, I think that's one of the really great freedoms for me, is that it'll work out. And I have some projects where, like, I'm finishing a set of books at the moment of writing, and you know, there's projects that are running in parallel almost all the time, well, all the time. But I never know, there's always room for something to turn up, you know, for something to, something you find, you go for a walk and there it is, you know, you walk over the wharf and you look out and there it is, there's the thing you're looking for. Or, and I think that's, not that you're looking for it, but there it is, that just kind of arrives. And I think that's wonderful. Then you can do a series of drawings and do whatever you do.
Well, there are many people I know, Clyde, who admire your work, really appreciate your creativity, and just marvel at how original it can be, and how, in that sense, as you put it earlier, risk-taking you can be. And that certainly inspires me, and I'm sure it does many others. And thank you for sharing.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks very much.